Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Fire Training, LLC. Your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to have you with us today. If you are a new listener, you are very welcome and thank you for joining us. If you are a returning listener, we're so glad to have you and the support you give us by listening to every podcast. If you happen to visit on our website today, please be sure to hit the little word podcast across the top menu. And if you'd like to hear more episodes, that will take you to our library. And you can listen to probably close to 150 episodes at your leisure. And on our website, while you're there, please sign up for our newsletter. It comes out about 7-8 times a year. We have one coming up hopefully in the next week and a half or so. And it keeps you in touch with everything that's going on with our show, the new website, and our new company. Also, if you follow us on Facebook, there's going to be only one Facebook page very soon that you can follow us on. That's the Five Alarm Task Force page. We'll be closing the Dalmatian Productions page because that company has been phased out. But we do appreciate your likes, and it might be easier for us to get back to you now that we'll only be on one page to answer your nice comments and questions that you may have. Also, on the platform, whatever your favorite platform is to listen to podcasts, most of those provide you with the opportunity of leaving a review. And that review is very important on two counts. Number one, the issue is that their algorithm for their search box is tied to those reviews. So if a podcast or whoever is being searched for has great reviews there, they're closer to the top of the search results. If you don't have those kind of reviews or don't have any reviews, then you're very way low down and hard to find. So please help us out no matter the platform you're on. If they allow you to leave a review, even if you don't want to say any words, just give us the 4 stars or 5 stars and you're done, and we sincerely appreciate it. Finally, we are getting close to putting out our new website, which will have a store where you'll be able to buy some of the promotional materials that we're going to have for the new website and what we're doing. And that'll be it. I'd like to tell you about my guest today, Jeff Dill. This will be Jeff's third appearance on the show. In 2011, Jeff founded the Firefighter Behavioral Health Alliance, FBHA. This organization is a 501(c). You can find it at www.FBHA.org. Jeff travels the United States and Canada, holding workshops to teach firefighters and EMS about behavioral health awareness and suicide prevention. FBHA is the only known organization that collects and validates data on firefighter and EMT paramedic suicides across the U.S. In addition, FBHA holds classes for counselors, chaplains, family members, and for those preparing for retirement. Jeff holds a master's degree in counseling from Argosy University in Illinois. He is a licensed professional counselor and a retired captain at Palatine Rural Fire Protection District in Inverness, Illinois. And we'll be right back with my guest, Jeff Dill, right after these words. Please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Annie and the gang from Insight Training? Well, here's some of their upcoming schedule. Tactical Thermal Imaging Burn and Learn Training, hosted by the Township of Upper Providence Department of Fire and Emergency Services in Pennsylvania. Insight Training will offer 2 days of classroom hybrid training with a Max Firebox. Day one will consist of classroom and Max Firebox demonstrations covering an overview of the curriculum. Day two will be a custom presentation titled Purchasing Implementation Criteria, where the department will receive a presentation on 3 thermal imaging cameras of their choosing and then test these devices through specific objectives with the Max Firebox. This event will be held October 1st and 2nd. Next, Tactical Thermal Imaging Train the Trainer in Harrisonburg Fire Department, Virginia. Insight Training will offer 4 days of customized training to the department. Days 1 to 3 will be in operations in service for their firefighters. On day 4, Insight Training will offer a customized live fire presentation for their training cadre. This event will be held October 27th and 30th. Next, Classroom Hybrid 8-Hour Tactical Thermal Imaging Training at Roxbury Volunteer Fire Department, New Jersey. Insight Training will offer an 8-hour day of classroom and live fire demonstrations on November 7th. Faith, Family, and Fire Conference, November 14th to 15th. Instructors Howard Reinwalt of FD Tactics, Kurt Isaacson of County Fire Tactics, and Andy Starnes of Insight Training will offer 2 full days of conference setting presentations on faith, family, and the fire service. This event is sponsored by FD Tactics and will be in Maine. See their website for details as the venue is still to be determined. And Live Fire Tactical Thermal Imaging Training, Harrisburg Fire Department, North Carolina. Insight Training will offer 3 days of classroom and live fire training for the entire department. This event will be held on November 18th, 19th, and 20th. Remember, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using The Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at chiefmillerapparel.com.
And again, welcome to this episode of Five Alum Task Force, brought to you by Five Alum Task Force Corp. And our motto is one family, one mission, first responders helping each other. And my guest today is a returning guest, this gentleman, a former firefighter, who just dedicated himself to an aspect of the fire service that, unfortunately, to the best of our knowledge, none of the national firefighting organizations do, except for one that might be the closest to doing that, and that would be the NFFF. But again, that all depends on how the loss is categorized. And loss, yes, that's what we're talking about today. When a firefighter, paramedic, or EMT, who all today, especially in these last 6 months, have faced amazing odds. And for some, it has become too much, and they've taken their own life. And Jeff, my guest, Jeff Dill, is really the only person that I've known in the 5 years I've been following this to record this. And sometimes I hear about it through the grapevine or through news flashes that come from the internet, from fire sources, but they're not the organizations where we would have expected, oh, we take care of our own, we're going to be on this. And that's not the case, Jeff, is it?
No, it truly isn't. And let me say, Steve, it's an honor to be back on your show. I'm an avid listener, and I appreciate what you're doing for our brothers and sisters as well across the U.S. and beyond. Because when we talk behavioral health issues, we're talking a global
issue. That's correct.
So, but I do have to clarify that the IFF has started or has begun to start tracking just a union. Suicides.
That's a start.
They've been coming to us for many years, asking for our numbers when they're about to speak somewhere, and I've always been wide open. I'm a retired union member, 3764 local, but they didn't approach me in January 2019. Said, "Hey, let's work together," and I said, "Absolutely." I mean, that's why I called an alliance, but they had certain stipulations that I didn't really want to agree to because, and I understand from their point of view, but from my point of view, just one of them was that I could not talk to the chiefs to validate the reports. Mm. And that's what we do. And so out of the 1,549 fire and EMS, with most of them being firefighters, over 1,260 or so, I validate by talking to the chiefs. And so out of the 1,549, I've personally spoken to almost 1,500 chiefs or family members who have called us to validate, to find out the methods, the reasons, and not only how they died, but how they lived. And so that's where we gain our information for our workshops. Sure. And to that point, we now have 7 different workshops that are based on the data and information from the families as well. One new thing is in 2019, we did start tracking dispatcher suicides. Okay. So we've only had 3 so far, but you're right. It's been a long 10 years, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's been tough.
I'm sure.
Very, very difficult, not only for me, but for my wife as well. You know, because she has to put up with things that my reactions. And, you know, it's funny that we talk about this or this is brought up because I was thinking about this last night while I was laying in bed. And, you know, it's when you can recall almost 1,500 stories in your mind as we can when we recall fires or vehicle accidents. Exactly. Over a 30-year career. Sure. I'm starting to think, hey, maybe that's a problem within itself for me. Even though I practice a lot of self-care, I started thinking, wow, 10 years of listening to all this death and things, and I can see it in myself, in my reactions, a little more frustration, a little more anger around the house, barking dogs and things. And I think all this plays a role, not only in my life, but in all our lives. Mm-hmm. And if it can affect me even though I'm retired, I'm thinking, you know what? And as you know, we didn't talk about behavioral health back in the days.
No.
And so I'm thinking, well, how many of us truly are struggling out there with even into the retirement, or those that have been injured or resigned or fired, you know, both volunteer and career. So this is an issue that we absolutely need to address. And it shouldn't be just a one type of training a year. And one of the biggest things that now we promote is that departments have a behavioral health program.
Mm-hmm.
And which means more than just an employee assistant program and a peer support team. There's so much more to it. And that was the workshop that we were doing for Keene University this morning. So, you know, it goes a long ways, this for sure. Behavioral health. And it shows itself in so many different ways.
Well, it's thanks to you and our colleague, Mark Lamplug, that mm-hmm. I put on the homepage of the website the thing text badge, you know, if you have a problem, you need somebody right. to talk to, text badge to 741-741.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's on the page. And then we have a PSA that we play almost as you listen, you know, we put a PSA on almost every show to for that same message for behavioral health awareness. It's just as important in my mind as our the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, which I jumped on the bandwagon and as soon as I heard about it in 2016, because I was uninformed. I always thought cancer was because of the folks who worked on the pile. That's why I thought it was affecting our firefighters, until I had a local firefighter here, retired, wound up a couple of months later with cancer. He got into it. I got referred to other people, and I just joined the bandwagon and got involved, thank goodness, most recently with Diane and Paul Cotter from Worcester, Mass. Diane was the one who she persevered to find out why a bunker gear could be dangerous, and got Dr. Graham Peasley of Notre Dame to do the testing, right. the nuclear testing on it. And we just had him on, and both podcasts and Zoomcasts are available on your podcast platform or on our YouTube channel at 5 Alum Task Force Corp. And all that, what that tells us is that as the professionals that we are, our three levels, firefighters, paramedics, and EMTs, and we know our brothers and sisters in law enforcement.
Right.
But the public has really known more about that, unfortunately, because that stuff often makes news headlines. But us, our three categories, maybe there'll be an obit in the local paper. And I am glad to hear, though, that the IAFF is now trying to keep record of union members who are lost that way. And I applaud them for that. I think it's a great thing for them to do. But
absolutely,
I think what you're doing in these programs, and I want to jump back to just after the last time you were on, you and your wife were making a tour of the absolutely. United States, visiting fire departments all across the country.
Right.
That you had contacted, and they wanted to come and listen to your talk and see what they can get out of it. How did that go, the rest of the trip after? I think you were in Northern California when we spoke.
Well, I can tell you there was a downside real quick. We put on over 44,000 miles that year traveling. What we did was we put out a broadcast that this is our route, this is our map, if you are interested in having FBHA. And what it allowed, and we were busy, but what it also allowed us was to stop at departments along the way.
Right.
As we're driving along, we see a volunteer department, we see a career department, and we would stop and just introduce ourselves, say, hey, here's some tip cards and things, and just let them know we're out here as a resource. Well, as you know, every May we hold an annual weekend retreat for right. family survivors. Well, that May we had to come back and put our trailer. We took our trailer to the business where we bought it for new brakes, and a furnace had to be updated. We went on our it was about a week we were gone in Utah, And when we came back, they said, well, the trailer's not ready yet. It'll be another few days. Well, then they contacted us, said it's ready for pickup, and it was the furnace. And they said, you know, I've had the brakes packed there before. And he said, oh, yeah, it's all ready, all set to go. And I think, okay, well, you know, it's a furnace. How are you going to test it in May in Arizona? I mean, it's too hot. So we picked it up, and we drove the hour home to where we at. It was a 55 and older community, it was right in the desert. And we had the coyotes running behind our trailer, and the donkeys, and all sorts of things. We loved it. But as I was backing it up, my wife opens the door so she can, you know, check to see if it's level as I'm backing it up, and some beer bottles rolled out of the door, and the smoke alarm detector fell out of the door. And she said, she waved me out. She said, come quick. And we went in there, and homeless people had been living in it for how long, I have no idea, but they destroyed the camper.
Oh, my goodness.
They were smoking so many different types of we have no idea. They were using the toilet without the water, and it was just, it was totally destroyed. And so when we called, and you know, they said, well, you know, crime happens. Well, no, it was in your secured parking lot.
Right.
And at first they said, it's not our problem. But then after the media got involved, and all my brothers and sisters in the fire service shut down their Facebook with 1,000+ complaints, they did the right thing. And kudos to them. They totaled the trailer. And yet I still had another 6 weeks of travel to do in California. So meanwhile, just a few months earlier, my mother-in-law had passed away. So my wife came to Branson, Missouri to be with her father, who's 89, lives in his own house. And so when I was doing my 6 weeks out in California, staying in hotels and doing the workshops, we bought a house. And so that's where we live now. We live here in Branson, Missouri. We're absolutely itching to get back on the road. We bought a new camper. Whether we're going to do it the same way, I don't know. It was very traumatic for us, because that was our home. That was our home, and the way we were treated and the way it happened. But it was very successful. Just to stop in and see our brothers and sisters, and people would open up in front of my wife and I. They would have tears in their eyes about calls, and they said, man, I've been thinking about calling someone. And it just reflected on us very deeply how many of our brothers and sisters are struggling out there in America.
I can tell you that within the next 90 minutes, my best friend, who I met the night we were both voted in at the Volunteer Fire Department of North Carolina, he was an 18-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. He was dropped off to go to the college there, but he had done a little rescue work with Bethesda Chevy Chase, and he lived in Washington, D.C., and we just kind of connected that night, because I had to come right from the synagogue because it was a holiday, and I was wearing a suit, and the only seat available in the room was one in the front row, and it turned out to be next to him, mm-hmm. and he was wearing just a T-shirt, raggedy T-shirt and shorts. He looks over to me and says, oh, my God, were we supposed to dress up for this? I said, didn't you get the memo? He goes, no, what am I supposed to do? I said, just kidding. I introduced myself. He introduced himself. We found out we were both Jewish. And that was it. That was October 1977. And here we are in 2020. He's still my best friend, other than my wife. He's going to be here. And whenever we're together, and we talk a couple times a month anyway, but whenever we're together, there is one call that we always talk about, that it was just the two of us with the engineer pickup, the old style Chevy pickup that had the gas cap on right behind the driver's door.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Skidded, lost control, overturned. The cap came off, fuel leaked, sparks lit it off. And our chief, who lived right down the street from where this was occurring, the side street, was screaming on the radio. We got dispatched. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. He was screaming on the radio, get me an engine company now. Get me an engine company. I need help. I need help. We got trapped, you know. So Rich and I got down to the station, and the driver we had said, come on, we're going. We're not waiting. We're not waiting for an officer. Steve, you jump up front. Let's go. And we did. And that car was cooking. That truck was cooking when we got there. And we didn't have time. The chief wouldn't let us lay in. So we had the 500 gallons in the tank to do it. And we got it out. We were just about the last drops. Enough EMS had just shown up. They had the jaws. We were able to get him out. He lived for 3 days. But
three painful days, probably.
I'm sorry?
Three painful days, probably.
And, you know, Rich and I, it was just, and when we first got there, he was still alive and screaming. So that's what that's what we talk about, because we're the, you know, we don't have anybody else to tell it to other than another firefighter.
Right.
You know, that's the call. That's when call 3.5 years together as really as buddies in a team, because we run on so many calls together. That's the one call that we always talk about, because it's the one that hurts us the most. You know, we feel maybe
But that's a coping skill.
Exactly.
And to release that, sometimes it builds up, and then when you have that conversation, it helps alleviate both what you're struggling with, or maybe you weren't, but still it's there.
Oh, it's always there. And that's why I said when those people opened up to you, even in front of other people, and they had the tears in their eyes, we know what that's like.
I mean, absolutely.
You know, and opening up to you today with it, you're right, it's a coping skill. It doesn't take away all the pain, but it does allow us to get the rudder back on straight.
Absolutely. And everyone's heard the word resilience. Oh, resilience. And people try to describe it. And for me, I keep things very basic. I'm a very simplistic person. To me, resiliency starts with talking. Talk. That's where it begins. And, you know, you don't allow it to, you know, build up in your mind and take over your life, because it does for so
many. Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. That, you know, that's probably the hardest
part. Talking about these things. But it goes back to that cultural brainwashing that we have in the fire service. It's a term I use, you know, and it's just about when we put this uniform on, this is how we're supposed to act. Brave, strong, courageous, give help, don't ask for help. I handle all the issues on my own. I don't want to be the weak link of the organization. And so when we have these calls, we struggle. I've never seen Joe, and I've never seen Sue, and I've never seen them cry or tear up and things. So I have to suck it up and absorb it in. And it becomes us. And to the point where at times we become numb to some of the calls that we see.
Right.
And it's very difficult, because unfortunately, counselors and families are also culturally brainwashed.
Oh.
I have two additional workshops. We have 7 total, but one is to train counselors and chaplains, and the other ones is just for family members. No firefighters are allowed. And I always ask the same question when I start the workshops. When you hear the term firefighter, what words come to your mind? For you, Steve, what word comes to your mind?
What? Bravery.
Right.
Tenacity. Mm-hmm. Dedication.
Absolutely.
Those are probably the top three.
And so then my question I ask them is, in 10 years, I've never heard any family member or any counselor say, well, you know, they have anger issues. And a lot of them drink. And let's not even talk about divorce rates and relationship issues. Because people are culturally brainwashed into these aspects. We were on CBS Nightly News a couple months ago. And the Billy Lewis family was a family that was interviewed as well. And I'm allowed to mention his name because his family wants us to promote. He's a firefighter out of California, well-known, well-respected. Billy took his life due to PTSD. And after a couple of days, for the next couple of days, I got emails and phone calls saying, Jeff, man, geez, we didn't know firefighters take their lives and they struggle. We knew about military and police, but not firefighters. Yeah. And it's like, why wouldn't we? You know, why wouldn't
exactly.
we?
Exactly. And so, that's the point of the show today, is just to continue to get this message out. You know, the night of that call, when we got back to the station, the driver, our driver, who was one of our 3-day caretakers, they work 24 on, 48 off, and their job was to get that first piece of apparatus out day or night. And we got back, and when I got back, I lost it. I went into the locker room and the restroom, and I was crying. Yeah. I was throwing up. You know, it was terrible, you know, and finally got over it. I washed my face, come up, but my eyes were all red, and I walked out. I was still wearing my bunker pants, and the guy said, tough call. And I said, yeah. He says, is it bothering you? I said, yeah. He goes, suck it up.
Right.
That was the emotional support I got for that call, until Rich and I started always talking about it to each other, because we could share it.
Right. And I'm sure their intent is to suck it up means, hey, there's going to be other calls. So, you know, exactly. if you can't handle right. this one, then you're probably not going to be able to handle the rest. And you probably shouldn't be a firefighter. And that was the belief. That was the belief. But understand, when we look at our data, and I always go to our data, Steve, is that the number one known reason for fire and EMS taking their lives. Do you know what that is? The number one known reason. In when I, you know, validate the well, confidential.
I have to say built up trauma is, you know, seeing this trauma day in, day out.
And a lot of people would say that and agree with you, but that's number three. Number one is marital and family relationships. Wow. They're taking their lives because of marital and family relationship issues. And I look at it this way, is that we're supposed to be this strong, brave type. And we keep it in, and it builds up, and it builds up. And then it explodes in ways at home, either through addictions or arguments, affairs, whatever it is that people struggle with. And so those type of things are very difficult for us to understand. And so many people say, well, Jeff, you know, it's a relationship, it's a marriage. But understand that cultural brainwashing, how this part plays into it. We hear all the time, you go to the grocery store, you go to parades, oh, there comes the firefighters, they're heroic, brave, courageous. And then all of a sudden, my wife or my husband or my partner wants to leave me. What are you kidding me? That rejection, why would you want to leave me? Everyone loves me. And I think it's very difficult to absorb that type of rejection when you are pretty much put on a pedestal, even though we don't believe that, but society believes that.
Yeah, but some of us,
well, yes,
we know right. what role ego plays as right. part of my course, The Elephant in the Firehouse, when mm-hmm. ego overtakes, your zest for the job. But why I smiled when you said that, and you know we have a pilot television or some form of drama about the fire service, about a real fire department in this country, Metropolitan Fire Department. And part of when we wrote the pilot for our protagonist, Tim, he separated from his wife and family. It's part of the storyline. And the reason why is because he always takes extra shifts at the firehouse. Why? Because his wife didn't want to work. She wanted to be able to raise their two children. So he worked. So she doesn't bring in an income. He has to bring in enough. But then she holds that against him.
Absolutely. For
spending all the time at the firehouse. He's right. trying to be good and supportive and continues to, you know, they're only separated, they're not divorced. And tries to help support her and the kids and the house they live in, plus his own apartment, and work the fire things. But we felt that line was so important because when we spoke with the city film and TV office and we explained what we want to do, is that we want real story. We don't want the Hollywood storylines
right.
that you see on the Cumberland Fire shows. We want real stories, and this department is willing to share, you know, not with, you know, the personal information, but share storylines mm-hmm. of real calls that, right. that deal with the several sides of the fire service in this department that we deal with in the drama. And to have you bring it up exactly that way, and that's really the opening part of the opening of the show in that pilot, is Tim going through this heartbreak of loving to be a firefighter. And it defines him who he is, as it does for most of us, whether right. we're active or retired. You know, we still define ourselves as firefighters.
Absolutely.
And trying to be a father and a husband at the same time. And there's that rift. That rift plays a role in so many of our brothers and sisters' lives.
Right. It does. It does, because I've talked to spouses. I mean, that's how I get a lot of my information for our workshops. A lot of them think, oh, you're going to work. It's like a frat house. You know, you enjoy it. You don't have all the stressors at home. I'm trying to raise the kids and making punishments and things. And it's, you know, for both male and female. Exactly. So it's very difficult for people to understand that world if you've never lived in it. I'm not saying it's perfect. Believe me, the fire service is far from perfect.
Amen.
You know, but the family issues are something that we really need to stress, and we do stress in when we talk about creating a behavioral health program. You can't, it's a key component of our 12 points. And if we truly want to make our firefighters happy, we have to make sure that we include their families on understanding why we act the way that we do and how it affects you and your children at home. So it's an important issue. Number two known reason for fire and EMS taking their lives is depression. I mean, how difficult is depression to deal with? Even in society, it's very difficult. And it always begs a question, and I bring it up because, and I'll bring it up to you and let me hear your opinion. And I'm not agreeing with it. I'm not agreeing with it. I just want to make the statement and see what I throw against the wall and what sticks. Are we in the fire service, in particular the fire service on this one, are we setting up our new firefighters for a fall if they have suffered depression in their growing up years, in their teenage years or something? Are we setting them up for failure because when they get on these calls and they see all the things and the struggles, does that depression, or if they have recovered, will it come back in earnest because of the things that we see and do? So should we be asking that question in our interviews when we're hiring people? And what are we going to do to help them? What has your department done to help people with depression? So thoughts?
Well, I think it's a great point. And I do think that at this point, not in our days, but today, with what we know, that since we do a background check on every applicant, for the most part, especially mm-hmm. for career departments, some volunteer departments do it as well. I mean, my two right. that I belong to did, I'd have to fill out a whole background sheet for both of them. But of course, that was before computers. You know, I got out in 85 and used in the following year. That was when I was injured in 85. And the following year, when I went back to work at the synagogue, down here in Florida, they had one of the first IBM ATs that were available for a professional purpose. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, you know, that was the first computer other than a Commodore that I had at home earlier, but I've been working with them since then. So today those background checks are complete and full and available. And I think that there's no reason why we should not with the client, not with the applicant, not behind their back, but with the client and somebody, not just the officer who's in charge of hiring. There should be also a counselor mm-hmm. who's trained in these tactics, and that should be part of the interview process, is that they sit down with them. I know that the two bouts of minor depression, well, one was minor, one was a bit stronger, but that I went through, I hid as long as I could and took care of the first one on my own by mm-hmm. making a phone call and reaching out to someone who I was referred to. And that, you know, within a couple of months, 6 weeks or so, I felt better right. and I understood what was going on. The other one was much worse. I had just lost my dad. My brother and I were opening up a video store in Boston, New York, in Boston, just before, before Blockbuster ever existed. He kept egging us on, saying, I'm so proud of you guys trying this. And I'd say, Pop, what if we fail? And he says, don't worry about it. Because if you do your best, you look in the mirror, and if the guy in the mirror says, you've tried your best to run that store to the best of your ability, then it doesn't work. Turn the lock and walk away with your head held high because you tried. And so we didn't, that was in May, June of 84. Mm-hmm. I was up in Boston just by chance in July visiting them when he took sick. I was one who first started life support on him. Had EMS show up and then find out that at that time in Massachusetts, we had no paramedics yet except in the city of Boston.
Right.
So I got him in the rig. We couldn't start an IV. He was in VTAC. Mm-hmm. All I could do was do pulse, do respirations and blood pressure. And, right. you know, I got him viable into the ER. They did a good job in the ER and got him up to a room in the CCU where he seemed fine when he sent me out to go get my hair cut because I was scheduled for one. He said, go get it because he disliked long hair. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because of the Beatles or anything like that. When he had his first heart attack when he was 44, he couldn't shave or get a haircut for several months. And my dad was like you and me, just a little gray on the side.
On the side and
on the side in the back. And he hated having that long hair. And so he disliked, because it reminded him of when he was incapacitated. It had nothing to do with music and stuff like that.
Right.
And in the genre of the time. So losing him, just as we were about to open the store, was like a knife in my heart. And I turned real sour. I had a very good face at the firehouse, a very good face at my store. But in my private time in my office in the mornings, I was a mess. I stopped doing everything that was important to me as far as Judaism. I stopped all of that. I blamed God for it. It was, and I got really mean. I was a real, as I said on another show, I was a real mean son of a bitch to live with. I had two girls, my two daughters. One was 2.5. The other one was 9 months old.
Right.
I wasn't giving them the love and care that I should have as a new father. And finally, I got the ultimatum.
Yep. Get help or go.
And I got help.
Good.
And I got help. And I'm not embarrassed to say it, because.
No, you shouldn't be.
Listen, right? There were 1.2 million firefighters in this country approximately at this very moment.
Right.
Okay. Not counting the retired. Not counting our disabled.
Right.
And not counting family members attached to that. We're talking about millions of people are tied up in this very tight ball of depression caused by this. That's a part of the service. Because I think even number one, the family relationship that you mentioned, I think
it's vital.
It's the fire service is vital as part of that reason as well.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we know that you often money, affairs, those are the two top ones for that kind of thing. But when you add in fire service and paramedics and EMTs and what we go through and what we see 24 on, 48 off for most of us, that's another big weight that we're carrying on our shoulders.
No, and absolutely. And I bring this question up because I met a firefighter who was approximately 13 years old, and he lost both of his parents in a vehicle accident. So he struggled with depression to the point where in high school he wanted to kill himself. And he did get the help, and then he went on to apply at fire departments. And people said, well, no, it says here, you know, they knew him in the community. So well, right. I remember how, you struggle with depression and things. Well, guess what? You can't hold that against them. You can't hold that person against having that depression, because you don't know the whole story.
Right.
And it goes back to everything that I do. I don't judge people. I never walked in your shoes. So if we are truly want to, and I don't want to change our culture. I like what I say is I want to enhance it. And you enhance it through education.
Sure.
So if we want to enhance our fire department, our cultures, then we as organizations better have behavioral health programs that say, okay, this is what we offer. Our EAP, we have outside resources, we have chaplains, we do training on it, more than just one workshop a year where it's like bloodborne pathogens. Everyone's looking for, oh my God, not this again. You know, you have to have all these things tied in. And that's why those 12 points become very important for a behavior health program. And I estimate that probably less than 5% of all EMS and fire departments in the U.S. have a true behavioral health program. And it's vital. Because of the things that we're seeing nowadays, not only the COVID and the stress and anxiety, the rioting that's going on, you add all the stressors of trying to provide for your family. You're working extra shifts now because of the wildland fires. And there's just so much going on that shame on us if we don't put together a true behavioral health program.
Absolutely. And as we talked before we started the recording, is that, it's very important to me, once I learned about it, and actually I learned about it from you and Mark. You were my educators for the teaching me exactly what most of us don't see. And so with that, I made that commitment that that's part of the mission statement of this podcast, is firefighter health, wellness, fitness for duty, the cancer initiative, and the behavioral health initiatives. This is what this podcast is all about. And coming, we have this new nonprofit that we've started We haven't promoted yet for donations, but the goal for the company is this one goal. Our mission statement, I think I already read it when you heard me say it when we opened the show, which is one family, one mission, first responders helping each other. Listeners can, or viewers can send an email to, well, we have a separate email address that they can send the story to. My two members of the board of directors, one's a battalion chief, the other's been a firefighter for many years as well. And we're going to vet each story. And when we do, we're going to try to, you know, cut a check for something that will help that that brother or sister in dire need.
Right.
You know, we can't award, we don't think we're going to be able to ever award thousands of dollars, but if it's a dire need, we hope that whatever we send will be helpful to them.
Absolutely. For these families, just having people know and talk to them, or send, even if it's sending them $100, that means a lot to these families. You know, like I said, we normally hold ours in the third week of May, and we hold our We Remember Night. Because of the COVID, we had to cancel. We were supposed to be in Alabama. We did, though, however, go down to Branson Fire Department, and they graciously hosted our We Remember Night on Friday. I think it was May 15th or something, the 17th.
Oh, that's great.
And it was joined in by just hundreds and hundreds of organizations across the United States. But we started getting emails from a lot of families saying, we don't know if we can go another 2 years without seeing all our families that we see at this reunion. So my wife scheduled it, and it actually starts next week on the 23rd here in Branson. And we have families from across the United States coming in for 4 days. And we have a lot of things planned for them, as well as some very tough discussions on our emotions as family members. But there are some, Steve, I tell you, they are some of the bravest, courageous, strongest people I've ever met in my life. Because as new families come in, they say, hey, you know, if you need to talk to us, you need to call us on the side, we'll be there to support you. We've been through it. We still struggle with it, but we will be there for you. And I can't do that. I never lost a family member who's taken their lives. And to see them take the lead on that is just, it's absolutely incredible. So my wife was able to put it together. We got this like 14-bedroom house, and they're coming from across the United States. So we're absolutely ecstatic. Now, you talk about money, and maybe that's what we can talk about in our next subject or our next particular section, how difficult that is for organizations such as myself and yourself and others that are trying to promote behavioral health. But understanding that there's a lot of people out here willing to help. And we need our brothers and sisters to do that internal size up every day. Ask yourself, why am I feeling this way? Why am I acting this way? And ask for help. And to our brothers and sisters out there, walk the walk with them. And I say this because so many have come back from rehab, come back from counseling, and they've been ostracized. And they feel uncomfortable, and we've had well over a dozen that have taken their lives because they felt that they never were accepted or fit in. And that's just something that we need to absolutely change.
Absolutely, without a doubt. You know what, and that's a good point. We'll take our break. When we come back, well, let's talk about the money issue. And I'm going to say right now, God willing, remind me for next year's conference, okay, and I'll send something to it.
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay, I think it's that important. That,
well, it is important because we have to charge for our workshops. Unfortunately, we don't get the. And we'll talk about that in the next segment.
Okay, all right. So, folks, we're going to take a break. If you're listening to the audio, you'll have a couple of messages, and then the video will be right back. It'll be like we never disappeared. So we'll be right back right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE, buckle pants check, turnout coat check, hood check, gloves check, escape line check, SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lei and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face piece on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face piece on.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your schism team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy, I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on, there's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
And we're back with my guest, Jeff Dill, the founder of the FBHA, the Firefighter Behavioral Health Alliance or Association?
Alliance.
Alliance.
So that we could all work together on this issue.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things I was just talking about during the break with Jeff is that we talk about these messages. Jeff and I have talked. He's been on, this is his third time on the show. He, as you heard, he goes around the country. And this is not a discussion just here. It does happen in other places. But the problem is, we have two things that we use our ears for. One is hearing and one is listening. Well, they're the same thing. No, they're not. Hearing, right now, you may hear in the background my landscape guy. He's taking care of the trimming and the lawn mowing because I can't do it anymore because of my back. But that's, I hear him because even though I'm doing the podcast, I'm not listening to it, but I hear it. We hear sounds outside. We hear the birds chirping. We hear cars go by. That's hearing. Listening is when we focus on hearing something particular. You put your headphones on to listen to music or to listen to this podcast. That's great. But what are you listening to when you're at your job? Are you hearing or are you listening there? And Jeff, you said that rang a bell with you.
It does, because you know what makes us different than any other organization out there, not only are we collecting the data, and when we say firefighters, it's not only career and volunteer, it's also military and wildland. I've spoken at a lot of Air Force bases across the U.S. But when you said that, you know, hearing, listening, and it struck a chord with me, because listening means You're hearing a message and you're taking action. And this is where, unfortunately, I become frustrated because we're still losing so many of our brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And so are they hearing the message? Are they listening to the message of get help for yourself when you're struggling? Because when we look at the data, and like I said, I always go back to the data, you know, let's take 2019. We lost 120 firefighters and 20 EMS at 65%. And where we say 65 because of EMS and volunteers, we feel we really lose out on those numbers. Are they listening to the message to get help? Are they hearing not only our message, or are they listening to everyone's message out there that it's promoting this behavioral health, get the help, reach out? Because this year we're at 60 firefighters and 21 EMS. I still have six that have come in recently, the last 2 weeks, of firefighters that have taken their lives. And it does become frustrating that, am I doing the right thing? Are they listening to the right message? Because the message comes from our brothers and sisters. I don't pull stuff off the internet or right. other people's programs. Our message comes right from our brothers and sisters. This is what they were struggling with. This is why they took their lives. This is what their families had gone through. And are they just hearing the message in our workshops, or are they truly listening to the message that this is? Maybe he's speaking to me without him even realizing he's speaking to me. This is what I'm struggling with. I need to reach out. I would say 50-50. We are very busy. We get a lot of phone calls for help. And so that, but once again, I look at the data and we are still losing our brothers and sisters. That aspect for me, who's in this business, why the good Lord put me on this path, I don't know, but that to me is unacceptable. I'm not naive to say we're ever going to get to zero because right. we're dealing with human beings. But there are so many different scenarios and cases that I've heard that, wow, all they had to do was reach out. Why didn't they call? Why did they do this? And like I said, I don't judge, but to me it frustrates that maybe the message isn't as direct or isn't impacting them, or maybe they just haven't heard of us. And believe me, that's happened a lot wherever I speak. They FBHA, no, I never heard of you. I did it in our seminar or our website this morning. You know, I asked the students, you know, which are firefighters, anyone heard of FBHA? Not one student had. And yet I travel over 100,000 air miles every year, except for this year.
Yeah.
And so that, when you mentioned that, that strikes a chord with me, is that what do we need to change? Should we change? Should we market ourselves? And I don't market FBHA because I'm not one of those, hey, is your department head of suicide? Call us. You know, we're not Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Right.
But these are very personal issues. And that's what makes it different, is that the family has the option. And I get so many calls that say, Jeff, why didn't the family put an obituary in the newspaper? And I look at it this way, Steve. You have two daughters like me. We have two daughters. We will always be in the protective mode of our children.
Oh, absolutely.
And if something happens, God willing, God forbid that it ever happens, if something ever happened to my daughters, I wouldn't, especially if they took their lives, I wouldn't want people to think ill will of them, because unfortunately in society, we still look at it as, hey, there's something wrong with that person.
Right.
Yes, there is something wrong with, and they need help. You look at all the homeless people in America, what's the percentage, and I'm sure it's high, that struggle with mental health issues. And that's where my frustration really comes to play in the aspect of trying to run our organization. We're just a small non-for-profit. And when I go to manufacturers and ask them to support us, you know, with donations, we're a 501c3.
Right.
And they look at me and say, Jeff, we love your work. We absolutely love it, but it's suicide. And that's a negative connotation against our business. And it's so frustrating to hear that. We try to go for grants with the AFG. We got one in right now. They're starting to award under the FPNS. It's been there. I think they're going into their third round. I haven't heard anything yet. You know, out of 6 years, we got it once, and that was in the first year, way back in 20, 2013 or 2014. And we do that because, you know what, we want to take that money, and it was only $25,000 at that time, to offer free workshops for organizations. This year, we asked for $76,000 to offer free workshops across the U.S. And I hate to say, I would love to, and nothing against the NFF and things, I would love to get their donation so I could offer free workshops.
Sure.
Just say, hey, you know what? We offer free workshops. You don't have to worry about the travel. You don't have to worry about anything. But we can't, because what's so important to us is the annual weekend retreat for family survivors called Those Left Behind. That's the title of it. We've done it now for, it'll be 6 years. Next year or next week is our sixth anniversary. That runs us between $18,000 to $25,000. So I have to charge for our workshops. And it's not a lot.
Right.
I don't want to do it, but it's so important for us to raise that money for these families, to let them know you're not alone. There are others out there struggling. And to me, that has been the most successful aspect outside of, you know, the educational workshops for our brothers of FBHA, is that we take care of the families.
That's great. You know, we mentioned, you just mentioned about, I think one of the important words is perception. And one of the things I did when I was working in synagogues for a long time, several times I had to start filling in for the rabbi or the cantor at a funeral. I did go to rabbinical school for a short time, but I wasn't happy where I was. So I left and I got into education, and I got into being director, the executive director, the COO of synagogues, and also ritual director. And so I didn't have any training other than I have an older brother who's a rabbi, and I've worked with rabbis my entire professional life. I started doing more funerals because I was getting referrals from strangers that I didn't know, that I heard, I got your name. And so I have always done this, that I've always gone to the family either the night before or two nights before the service. I asked them, tell me about your loved one and tell me lots of funny stuff about your loved one. What do you mean, funny stuff? Tell me, tell me their shtick, some of the funny things they did or the jokes they liked. Well, why? I said, please, just share with me. And we would sit there for an hour, 2 hours sometimes, and I'd take notes, put it all together. And they said, well, why? Is this going to be part of your eulogy? I said, I don't give eulogies. She, what? But don't you? I said, yeah, I don't give a eulogy. I celebrate a life, because that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And thankfully, for the last, I guess, 10 to 15 years, I haven't had a congregation not laughing with happy tears and with happy tears.
Right.
All the services I've done just for that reason. So we still get the message, but we're delivering it in a different manner that people are open to listen to and not just sit there with their heads bowed and just hearing it.
Right.
Because you get them involved. They remember Uncle Al. They remember Aunt Kathy and Grandpa. They remember, I can't believe when Grandpa did that. I thought he was going to kill everybody. But they're all laughing with it. And you can't do anybody who's passed any more justice than bringing the people who love them together and make them remember, help them remember the good times, and not just the last couple of weeks or the last month or so and stuff like that. And that works. And I think what you do in your workshops and the message that you bring, it's the same thing like just a moment ago when my head was down, I was looking for the copy that I had written for the PSA we do for behavioral health. And at the end of it, I say, this message is brought to you by this podcaster because he's been there and done that. I felt that, you know, that has to be part. I can't start, you know, blabbering about behavioral health because I'm sitting behind the microphone. Yeah. You got to take care of yourselves like that. I've been there and you know it. And I know what it's like to be there. I didn't have anybody in the fire department either time to help me. Nobody was there. I had to go outside and find somebody, especially that second time in Syracuse area. So I don't, it's not a black mark for me. It's simply part of my growing up and my life. That's what it is. Was it difficult? Yeah, hell yeah, it was difficult. It was a pretty crappy, 4 or 5 months But something happened to me the following April after he passed. I shared it in writing. I don't know if I've shared it with you, but I'll email it to you.
Okay, please do.
Yeah. It changed me. It was the defining factor that made me pick up the phone. Some people will believe what they read, and some people will think I was just imagining it. But if you read to the end of my story, it's a short story, but if you read to the end of the story, it would be very difficult for me to imagine it. And there's a coda that I haven't officially added it yet to the document, but it happened just about a year ago with my younger brother. So there's a coda I have to add to it. But it changed me, and it told me, you know what? I need to be okay for my family. I need to get help and redirect myself, get rid of the anger. That's when I reached out and found that person and spent some time with them, and they were a big help. There was, again, you've said it several times, there's no judgment. You walk in there emotionally naked.
Absolutely.
And your counselor is emotionally naked. They don't hold anything against you when you walk in or what they hear from you. They're just there to be your ears, to hear you and then give some feedback. It was tough. I mean, right. It's tough to open up to somebody you don't know, and you don't even know you can trust them.
Absolutely. And you bring up such a great point, is because I get a ton of calls from a lot of firefighters who said, "Hey Jeff, my chief asked me to put together either a PTSD or a suicide awareness program for our department." And I'll say, "Well, what experience do you have in that?" And they said, "Well, none. That's why I'm calling you." I said, "This isn't pulling hose off an engine. These are people's lives." And I tell them, before you get involved and start writing things, you need to go out and talk to people and listen to what they have to say, what they struggle with. And you will have to absorb that so that you will have that experience of your own emotions, of what maybe you are dealing with. And you absorb that from, you know, your brothers and sisters that you talk to. You have to, if you're going to get involved, you have to dive in and feel it yourself, because you can't read this from a book.
Right.
You have to go through, and every one of us has a story, or many of them. You know, my PTS comes from my granddaughter at 22 months who lost her right eye to cancer. Mm. You know, I remember, you know, when she went into surgery, to hear my daughter wail like I'd never heard anyone else. But that wasn't the real big issue for me. The real big issue was my thought process. Hey, I'm supposed to do something here.
Right.
You know, I'm not only my grandfather, I'm a firefighter. I was a battalion chief at the time. I'm a licensed counselor. I'm the founder of FBHA. I'm a grandpa. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm supposed to do something to save that eye. The audacity. Who was I? You know, 50% of her globe was encapsulated with this cancerous tumor. The eye had to come out. And I struggled with that for months afterwards. I began to isolate, thinking, "Wow, geez, why didn't I see the signs? Does anyone know really the signs of retinoblastoma?
Did I fail? Is the question.
Exactly. Yeah. Why didn't I see that sign? And now my granddaughter has to lose her right eye. And it was a struggle. So I tell people, get out there and listen to people. Talk to them and listen. Hear what their issues are, and then absorb that. And then build your PowerPoint based on those issues. Don't go seeking it off the internet, what other people say. Feel it from your heart. And that's, like I said, that's what makes us different. These are our stories from our brothers and sisters. And it's so important, and it's needed. Absolutely. But also, we have to practice self-care. Because when you give a piece of your heart and soul, you better have some type of self-care to help yourself on a daily basis, whether it's listening to music, whether it's walking, jogging, praying, art, whatever it is. Find that self-care, 15 to 30 minutes a day, where you just get away and relax.
That's so important. I would be remiss if I didn't ask, how's your granddaughter doing today?
Oh, she's fabulous. She'll be 11 years old. She rides horses professionally. What God takes in some ways gives in so many. She's such a empathetic, compassionate young girl. Very smart. She didn't get her brains from me, I can tell you that much. So, but thank you for asking.
That's good. That's wonderful. The thing is this. This doesn't have to be the only wonderful news that listeners take away or viewers take away from this podcast. You're talking about and providing our listeners and viewers with the simple tools they can set up. You know, they don't have to do a 2-year degree to help. They don't have to say, well, I never took psychology in college, so I can't do anything like that. Well, you know what? I never fought fires either until I learned how to fight fires or right. do an extrication or even CPR when I first learned it when I was becoming a lifeguard at 16. I said, we learn skills. Some of them are handy skills like woodworking, statues, clay, whatever. And some of them are interpersonal skills that we develop. Mm-hmm. We're not all great at all of them.
No, right.
We're good at some and less good at on others and excel maybe on one or two. And so I think what you're saying is so true. We need to look inward first at ourselves and right. say, can I help? Can I be a help to somebody? That's number one. Number two is, wait, before I help somebody else, how am I doing myself? Am Absolutely. I coping okay? Do I have these thoughts? Do I have deep frustration or depression? Listen, in this business, we're all going to come back from certain calls. And all the chatter around the kitchen table is just going to be real quiet. That's what happens in this business. Uh-huh. You know, accountants right. don't run into that. Our refuse collectors, with all the work they do in the horrible weather, but they don't deal with that. But we deal with this. We deal with trauma and tragedy almost every single shift that we're on.
Yeah, so, both professionally and personally.
Right. So we have to do a self-assessment first. How am I doing? And you think you're brave to go into a 6-story building with fire on the roof. You don't have a line underneath you, but you have somebody on the 5th floor trying to crawl out the window. You're brave enough to go up there, throw a ladder, and go up there and get them out. Are you brave enough to say, that last call was pretty bad. It's been on my mind for 2 days now. I can't get it out.
Which some aspect is normal. Right. I mean, it's normal. But when it really carries on to 2 weeks,
right.
2 months, and all of a sudden you see your behavior change, and then it's time. That's why I say that do that internal size up. Right. Ask yourself on a daily basis, why am I acting this way? Why am I feeling this way? And it's important. This is why, Steve, we really profess your resources. You know, your peer support teams, your chaplains, rabbis, your EAP programs, train those people. They're good people. They've just never been trained on the fire and EMS culture.
Right.
What about your outside resources, your counselors? Now, the National Volunteer Fire Council knows that I get 10 to 15 calls a week from firefighters all over and EMS from all over the country looking for people outside of the fire service, outside the EAP program. And I vet and I call them back with 2 or 3 counselors that I feel comfortable in going with. Well, at NVFC, who has really worked with us since our beginning, them and the NFPA, really have accepted FBHA. And the NBFC, I've done a lot of trainings with them. So we got together and said, maybe we need to create a national directory of counselors. And so for the last about 4 months, I have personally spoken to about 260 counselors across the United States to vet them. And we have put together, and it continues, it adds weekly. As new counselors hear about us or we promote it to different places, to different departments, if you have a counselor that you think might be interested, works with first responders, I have an application form they can send. I can send them to fill out. And we have put together this national directory, and you can find it on our webpage at ffbha.org under resources. Click on national directory. And you'll find people in your state. And if you can't, because we haven't covered all states yet, and if we don't have anyone in your area, remember telehealth, you can use telehealth across the state,
right?
And you have your own counseling session within the comforts of your home. But I will still vet counselors for you. This is what we do. You know, we no charge for it. We do that to help out our brothers and sisters. So having all these resources, your behavioral health program is absolutely imperative nowadays in the EMS and fire service.
I think that's such a great idea. I think a lot of us are reticent to perform a self-inventory because we don't like I weigh too much.
Yep.
Exactly. My body's not right. I don't like my hair. I'm losing my hair. We just don't want to face those facts, even though they're right in front of us every day.
Right.
So if we can get the message out to our brothers and sisters that, you know, that each of us holds a very special place in society because we have dedicated ourselves with one motive. That's to help people in our community. That's what being a firefighter or paramedic or an EMT, a police officer, whatever is about.
Dispatcher.
Yep. Dispatcher, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Dispatchers,
absolutely.
Right. Dispatchers. And even, you know, we've included now, especially with all these terrible tragedies that were that are affecting first responders on emergencies on active roadways. Mm-hmm. We've added in the recovery operators and the road rangers.
Right.
You know, especially the road rangers can often be the first ones on the site of a major accident. And
correct.
They're going to see stuff, you know, they're supposed to be like putting in new batteries or arranging for a tow for you or right. helping you change a tire. They're not supposed to be dealing with a huge four-car pileup with massive trauma and stuff like that. But they see it and they take that home. And our dispatchers are truly the very first of first responders because they get that first phone call. They're the first ones most of the time to hear what that call is about. And they send us out. So they hear it. They stay with the caller as long as they need to or they can. They transfer it to dispatch, the call, the information dispatch. And sometimes those dispatchers themselves, the call takers, actually stay on until first responders get to their home, their local.
Right. Right.
Because they're trying to help that person kind of like focus on more information to help the first responders rather than the calamity. And so we need to include all of them. We've just lost our third dispatcher to COVID in Broward County this past week.
Tragic.
And it is because these, I believe all three have been women, and these women, same thing. They dedicate themselves to a job that most people would never want to take.
Absolutely.
Answer the phone for somebody's crazy call. And if you've never been on a phone for a call, and I wasn't a dispatcher, but we did have day people at the station in Syracuse. So we had a phone line direct to our station to activate the pages and the siren. But I've heard some of those calls. I've heard people who were very lucid and gave excellent information that I could pass on. And I've heard nothing but mass confusion on the other side of the phone. And somehow you have to worm your way through that morass of confusion to get the facts and get the location and what's going on. And it takes a special person who's patient and knows how to do that. And
I think it's very difficult being a dispatcher, Steve, because most of the time you don't know how that call ended up. And so how good are our minds at recreating situations? So now they're off shift. They're trying to go home, go to bed or something. And that call is playing through their mind. Well, what if this happened? What if this happened? What happened to this? We're very good at creating things in our minds. So right. it is important for departments to make sure that they pass that information on to the dispatch. Hey, this is how this call ended.
Right. And, that's a great idea.
I think it's important that we include that in that aspect to give some closure to that dispatcher as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. I think it's very important. And I think that we need to, and in a lot of cases, a lot of communities, dispatching has been centralized. So it takes care of multiple agencies, multiple communities. But I think that when we talk about our discussion today, which is behavioral health awareness, I think we need to include all these people as a form of first responders, because they deal with this. They deal with it as much as we do as firefighters, paramedics, and EMTs and police officers. So we need to remember that they become part of the story. The story doesn't begin when we arrive on scene. The story begins with 911.
That first phone call.
Exactly.
And ends in, you know, pretty much recycles back to the 911. This is how this call ended.
Right. And it needs to be that way. See, again, like you said, in the best way, it provides closure for those who are part of the call but weren't on part of the call.
We're all on one team here.
Exactly.
We're on one team trying to, you know, bring some help to the communities.
So true. So let's give the listeners and viewers the website for FPHA. Sure. It's so important. I mean, we produce it. I'm going to talk with you off air, and we're going to add FPHA to our promotional sponsor list. So every podcast will be read twice at the open and at the close. And I appreciate that, sir. And I want the word to get out there that that there is help available. And if you don't know where to go, FPHA will help find a place for you.
Absolutely.
We need to get those messages out so that our brothers and sisters don't have to go thumbing through books or, you know, going all over the internet to find help. They can find vetted help through the FPHA.
Right.
And that's the most important thing, because you want to make sure you have somebody who understands what we go through. You know, that's the same push we've done with the cancer initiative is we know that both the IAFF and the IAFC and the National Volunteer Fire Council, the NVFC, have joined together to create documents that firefighters can download and take with them when they go to a physician and say, I'm a firefighter. This is what I often see and deal with. This is the chemicals, this is stuff like that. And they fill it out, and you bring them to your primary care physician, and you can do the same thing and keep a copy of it and bring it if you ever need to look for behavioral health assistance. You can have that paper filled out and ready. And I think that is so important, so that you, from the get-go, you're ready to say, I'm taking care of myself. I don't want to get firefighter-related cancer. And I'm wearing all my bunker gear during overhaul. I'm staying on air and overhaul. We go to decon when we come out. Before we even go to rehab, we have to go to decon, get decon. Yeah, it's a pain in the butt, but that's what we have to do. Stay healthy, doff our stuff, walk over to rehab, get a cold drink, get a bite to eat. And then if we need so, we put our gear back on, we go back in again. We put another tank on and we go. But we need to know that there is a part of that rehab that's not taking your temperature or your blood pressure or your PSO2, it's going to be, how are you doing?
Well, and 2 points to that is that the number four known reason for fire and EMS taking their lives is physical or mental health issues. And under that has moved up rather quickly is firefighters who are taking their lives after they were diagnosed with cancer. And they've left notes for their families. I don't want to burden you financially or emotionally. So that's the aspect. And the second one is that because of PTSD and workman's comp, to document the calls that you've been on is going to be imperative.
Right.
And so it might, you know, for someone that's on 2-3 years, you start documenting those issues, and then, you know, you keep it for years on end. Oops, I hear something.
Yeah, that's caffeine. That means my friend just walked in. Well,
that's fine.
But I think, but I think it's important to that we get this message out. And I really want to start dedicating part of what we do as that mission statement. Because if I don't, then that part of the mission statement is just blowing hot air, and that's not what we're about. You know.
Well, I absolutely appreciate what you do for us and the fire service, but for FPHA, bringing us on so that we can talk a little bit about our efforts. So I appreciate it, Steve. It means a lot to me.
I'm glad. It means a great deal to me. And that's why I reached out, because when I looked at the listings, I said, gee, I haven't had Jeff on in a long time. And it's so important now with the COVID and everything else that we're hearing. I said, I want to bring him on. That's why I reached out. And I'm so glad we were able to put this together, because it is so important. There's no doubt. I mean, this can be, and we know, unfortunately, it is oftentimes a matter of life and death.
And our website is, of course, www.ff, B as in Bravo, HA.org. So FFBHA.org. And my personal email is jdill@FFBHA.org. Okay. So that's how they can contact us.
All right. So again, I'm going to repeat that. So the website is www. F as in Frank, F as in Frank, B Bravo, H Hotel, A Alpha.org. And Jeff's email is right there at jdill, D-I-L-L, at FFBHA.org. Do not, please, do not hesitate to reach out to Jeff and the FBHA, even if you just have an inkling that you have a little problem with something. Because, you know, just like we love to get to a fire, we love to get to a fire call when it's still in the incipient stage.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So we can get it out, take care of it, and go home. We want to do the same thing with this issue. We want to. I apologize.
Hey, no problem. I got a 90-pound doodle that she's a puppy.
She's a 20-pound 8-year-old who thinks she's still a puppy. But the point is that if we can do the same thing at the incipient stage when someone's having a problem,
right,
we stand a better chance of helping them with a better outcome than if we wait till the problem actually blows up.
And not only them, but their family.
Their family, exactly.
And what does that do for the children? I mean, I always look at, well, if we have a firefighter who kills himself, and, you know, how does that affect the children? Then as those children grow, how does it affect the grandkids? Well, yes, your grandfather, well, he killed himself. And this. So there's an issue as it goes down through, you know, decades of children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So.
And aunts, uncles, I mean, the entire family.
Right, is absolutely.
Just as they are for any loss.
Right,
but when,
absolutely.
When it's someone takes their life, there's been, of course, in for the history of man, probably that stigma attached to it. Oh, they can't handle life. They don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You can, you know, one thing I've learned when I worked in nonprofit and other synagogues, I can't judge anybody.
Me either. I mean, how do you know for 3 years our brother or sister struggled every day to get out of bed to face the demons that danced in their head?
Right.
And, you know, they showed up for work. They didn't want to be mocked out. They wanted to be accepted. And yet, just like if your body's fighting the disease and it finally gets worn out, how do you know that their mind now is just purely exhausted of fighting that battle time in and time out, right, even if they asked for help? Even if they asked for help, it's still a struggle and a battle. And that's why, like I said, I don't judge,
right,
not one iota. Right. So,
well,
so
I will judge you and say you're doing a great job.
Well, I appreciate it, my friend.
And such, I mean, I know you've been working on it a long time, and I know what it means to you. And the first time that, you know, Mark recommended you to me, and I didn't know you, and I read the book, I said, okay, well, you know, and I forgot. I'll do that in the opening before we do the video. I'll do the bio there. But I said, well, I don't know this guy, but, you know, it's worth a call if Mark recommended him, I'll give him a shot, and that's it. And, you know, you've been on this your third time, and it will not be your last, because this area is so important. And like you said, we barely even touched COVID today, but
right,
what has happened by the pressure of COVID, it's not that COVID brought more trauma,
right,
it's the pressure that COVID has put upon our first responders that we have to be aware of.
Well, that may be a show in a couple months or so.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Well, yeah. God willing, vaccine will come by the end of the year, and we'll all be better. Well, Jeff, thank you very much again for your time and everything you do with the FHBA. I shouldn't say for, because it's your business, just like Lifelong Task Force Corp is mine. But I know that your conferences, especially the yearly family conferences, is amazing and wonderful what it does. As I said, I want to help you for next year. So remember to please reach out to me with that. And let's not be strangers.
No, not at all.
You know, and if you come up with something that, you know, you want, then you reach out to me and say, hey, can we get a podcast in the next week or two? I got something I really want to bring up. So let's do that.
Thank you, sir. And once again, it's an honor to be here. Stay safe.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you. And thank you for all the work you do for our brothers and sisters. It's not easy. It's not easy work. We know that. But it's the best that we can do. And that's the most important thing. As my dad said, can you look in the mirror? And does the person in the mirror say, you've tried your best? Then you walk away with a straight head on.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks a lot. Folks, if you're listening to the audio, we'll be back with a little bit more. If you're listening to the video, this is the conclusion. Thank you for joining us today on this episode. We'll have another episode for you next week. Stay safe and stay well. You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force.
Time to call it a night. The kids are tucked in, the TV's off, and the dog's in the den. Seems all is calm. But wait, it's not all right. When it's time for bed, keep your family safe in the event of a fire. Close before you doze. In other words, close your bedroom doors when it's time to sleep. You've installed working smoke and carbon monoxide alarms and practiced fire escape plans. Now add this important step to protecting yourself and your loved ones. Close before you doze. Closed doors dramatically decrease heat and carbon monoxide levels, providing trapped occupants more time to escape when seconds count. Closed doors can slow the spread of smoke and fire, conserve oxygen levels, and keep temperatures significantly lower. Also remember, if you're the last one to exit, make sure you close the main door. For more information about close before you doze, visit ulfirefightersafety.org. A life safety message from UL Firefighter Safety Research Institute, your local fire department, and Five Alarm Task Force.
Over the last few weeks, as we began our fifth season here on Five Alarm Task Force, you may have heard a new voice on the show doing some of our voiceovers and PSA spots, and that is my good friend and dear friend, Tom Mitten. Tom owned his own audio-video production company in Wilmington, Delaware for probably nearly 25 years. He's still involved with AV and teaches television production, writing, etc. at one of the universities up in the Wilmington area. So Tom has been a dear friend and offered his help. And because he has such a great audio voice and he's a good friend, I brought him on board to do some of this. And we have a special surprise coming up from Tom sometime in the next couple of podcasts. I'm not going to let you have it now, but I just want you to know that this is my good friend, Tom Mitten. He does a great job with his voiceovers, and he does a great job in production as well. So, Tom, welcome to the team. We're so glad to have you. Much success as we continue on this new path.
I'm probably okay to have one more drink before I drive home. I'm probably okay. I open the window to stay alert.
Probably okay. I just popped some gum in my mouth.
Step out of the car, please.
I probably made a mistake.
Probably okay isn't okay when it comes to drinking and driving. If you see a warning sign, stop and call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Steve. This is a very powerful show that we recorded for this episode. And it's a topic, of course, that really no one likes to talk about or even think about because of its impact. But it is very important. And so if your department or organization does not have an EAP program or any sort of a counseling program, we suggest that you get in touch with Jeff at jdill at ffbha.org. And no matter where you are in the country, Jeff will be able to help you find someone or work with you towards that goal so that you can help your members who need it when they do. Now, I'm going to change the subject, and we have gone live. That's right, live. Still on the old URL, the same, DalmatianProductions.tv, but that'll be changing next week. URL, and our donation buttons are up. We set them up with PayPal so that you can use any form of payment that PayPal accepts, and that is, you're not limited to just a credit card or whatever. Also, you have the opportunity of choosing from which of our accounts your donation will go. We have an operations account, and that deals with just what we do, operations, getting this podcast out, all the paperwork and red tape to have a company, etc. So that's our operations account. And then we also have our foundation account. And that is the one, I have to say, as important as the ops is, the foundation is where we're going to raise the funds to donate to firefighters and other first responders in dire need. So we're going to need your real help there. And we will be having, we'll be keeping track. We will be having gifts for the donations. You can see that on our website. If you go to our website and across the top, you'll see a tab called Our Purpose. That will tell you why we're doing this, what we're doing. You can also choose to see the donors page or the corporate donation page. And there's also a little page there that will provide you with some idea of the gifts that we're going to give for donations. We're still working on it, though. We're still working with our vendor. So we have not made any shirts or stickers or emblems yet. We are in the midst of working with them to create all that. But we wanted you to know that this has all changed. The whole concept of the podcast has changed. Instead of just providing education to our listeners, firefighters, firefighting buffs, and those who are just interested, we're going to be able to help first responders, especially firefighters, in dire need. And that's what my whole plan was to develop a program where we could reach out and help a brother or sister in dire need or their families if the worst had happened. So that's what's important to us now, is helping others who are in the same business, who do what we love to do, but something has happened, turned sour in life, and they're in dire need. And very soon, we will announce the email that you can use to send us your story. The three members of the board will vet every story, so you'll need to provide the information that we request. And then we're happy to try to work with you and do whatever we can to help out. How much we can give, we don't know yet. It all depends on what your gifts are and any corporate gifts are, because we haven't even started approaching corporate donations yet. But I will, as soon as I can. I keep telling my friends I wish I was an octopus. I can have eight arms and doing so many different tasks all at the same time, because it's just me in this office. But you know what? Even though I'm alone in this office and doing this work, it's because I'm helping somebody else that makes it all worthwhile. This isn't for me. This is for you, and that's what we hope it's going to be. So that's the story for where we are right now. That's my view, and we'll see you again very soon. Stay safe.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You will be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate. Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that?" If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and 5 Alarm Task Force.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Jeff Dill, for joining us to discuss behavioral health in the fire service and EMS. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have an idea for a show, please send us an email to dalmatprod@outlook.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5 Alarm Task Force, on Facebook at /DalmatProdFire, and on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.